This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
Put your headphones on, Nat! Put your
headphones
on!
I know, I forgot to have your headphones on.
Oh, God. Oh, you know, this is, my... slick as fuck. Slick as a weasel. Slicker than a weasel. My name is Nick Helm.
My name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And this is Nick and...
Nat's fan club.
That's fan club. First rule of fan club is tell your friends about fan club.
Not to watch it, sorry. Don't tell your friends to watch fan club.
This is a fucking disaster. We're in the studio live.
Live.
Nat, how's Edinburgh going?
It's going great.
It's great that you managed to commute all the way down.
I know, it's a silly
from the windy
idea.
City, Edinburgh.
And the problem is I've only got 10 minutes before my show starts by the end of this.
And so you've got to rattle off, haven't you? It's 15 minutes, really, isn't it?
Yeah, about 15 minutes.
Past one, right?
By the time I get out of the building, it's 10, isn't it? And then
By the time you finished signing all the breasts, we have a lot of... By the time you've signed all the autographs, then you've got a good 14 minutes to get to the venue. 1:15 every day on the Royal Mile.
On the Royal Mile.
Where is it?
It's at the Counting House.
Bloody hell. You better get a wag on. Very brave of you to do this show in London live every Friday when you've got to go all the way up to the Counting House in Edinburgh. How is your show going?
It's going amazingly, Nick.
Yeah?
I think I've got big audiences and everyone loves it.
Yeah. I love how fucking optimistic you are.
That's right.
So...
got all the awards.
Good. All of the awards.
Yeah, got them all.
Yeah. Good. I'm looking forward to next year. I'm definitely doing a show next year. I'm not ever taking another year off Edinburgh.
It's been an error.
Just feel everything unraveling slowly. and I realise
it's a focus, I suppose, isn't it?
It really focuses your year. I think that for a comedian, because you've got so much free time in your life, it really does give you... I always think about it like it's like a school year. Where in September you start from scratch and you start writing and then you kind of like, or you tour, you know, you kind of like flog that dead horse for a bit longer. But basically you start over again, you start writing new material, you start gigging again, you have a little bit of a break maybe at the beginning of September, but then by the time you get into kind of like Christmas, you're gigging again, and then the new year is where you start thinking about, right, we're going to do Edinburgh exams, and then you revise, write your show, do previews, and then by the time you get to Edinburgh, it's summer, and you're 50, and you've wasted your life. you just repeat that. But
I think of it as well in terms of school years as different comedians. So there's some that I go, oh, they're in my year.
Yeah.
And there's some that are like bigger boys and girls.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there are some that are like new kids.
Yeah, year sevens that have just started.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Grange Hill.
And there's some that have left the school and gone around the world and have come back as teachers. So
some of the younger kids are also, they're overachieving and they're doing their exams and you're still doing your mocks.
Yeah. Still.
Happiest days of your life.
There can be. Oh, well, I'm glad Edinburgh's going well. I do love doing this show. It's just round the corner from where I live. I don't see it as in any way a step down. It's absolutely exactly ticking all my boxes, that's for sure. So what have you been up to lately, Nat?
I saw a film, Nick. I saw The Incredibles 2.
The Incredibles 2?
Yeah.
And?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I love the first Incredibles, though. I reckon the first Incredibles is one of my favourite films of the 21st century.
The original Incredibles?
Yeah, absolutely love it.
That's a real odd one. I think that is an odd one because it didn't do anything for me. I would say it's one of those anomalies, a bit like Pirates of the Caribbean, where on paper it seems to tick all my boxes, and then when I see it, it just does absolutely nothing for me.
I think it's like about the best superhero film certainly in
The Incredibles.
Sense, love it. Absolutely love it. I think it's got a proper sort of sense of wonder about it. And I think there's bits of it, like, I remember seeing it and having that real, like, joy in my heart. There's a bit where the little boy Dash starts running and he's able to go faster and faster, and you get this kind of realise. It's that as well. It's that thing where it's one of the first time where people's powers are realised on screen in a really proper way, like they're like they're supposed to look like in that way.
Because
it's animated.
But it's not just animated like the Mask of the Phantasm.
No, it's
where it's kind of like 90s studio animation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like proper top of the line CGI.
Yeah.
Well, it's not CGI, is it? CGI is when you use it for live action films. It's animated, computer animation. And I suppose that the only thing that, you know, is limiting you is your imagination.
Well said.
So yeah, I guess you're right.
And it's got a real sort of 50s, 60s aesthetic, really appeals to me.
I love the Art Deco to it, you know, and I love the design to it. Yeah. Brad Bird's really good. I mean, the Iron Giant is a bit like that as well.
Exactly, very much so.
Brad Bird's really good like that. But did you see Tomorrowland?
I did, and I wanted to like it more than I liked it.
Right.
I was really up for it, but I was a bit like, while I was watching it, I just found myself going,
So what did he do? Mm. He did
Mission Impossible.
Well, no, he did The Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Then he did The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Then he got drafted in to save Ratatouille.
Yes, he did.
And then he did Mission Impossible 4. And then he did The Incredibles 2.
Yeah. I think that's it. And Tomorrowland in between.
And Tomorrowland, yeah, that's right. He's.
I feel like
he,
I really.
What's he really
like
famous
him.
For? The little toaster.
Was that Brad
no,
Bird?
No, was that Brad Bird? Can you look up Brad Bird's IMDb for us, Natalie?
But yeah, like Iron Giant is the first one. But it's like The Iron Giant is a brilliant film.
It is. Yeah, it's got an amazing voice cast. Vin Diesel's never been better.
No.
And Jennifer Aniston. I mean, I'm just listing stuff off the top of my head. It's not really a debate, is it? It's a really good film. He worked on The Simpsons.
Oh, okay. Well, that sort of makes sense.
You've got to be faster than this. Cut and paste. copy and paste. You're not cutting and paste. You're not cutting and pasting off the internet.
That'd be terrible, wouldn't it? If you just terrible. Got holes in
the internet.
Battery's not included.
Did he really? Battery's not. I saw
did
that.
Did he write it?
What did he do? No information other than battery's not included.
That's a long time in between. He directed it. Did he?
He didn't direct it.
That's years before.
He did not direct Batteries Not Included.
He did the screenplay for Batteries Not Included.
Oh, what's happened here? I tell you what, what's happened here is that when we're live, we panic a lot. But when we occasionally aren't live, we
not
don't
today.
Panic
we're
at
live
all.
Today, but
we are live today.
Sometimes we're not.
But
live.
What happens is we do absolutely zero prep until 30 seconds before air, and then we panic as soon as we press the button.
What I like about Batteries Not Included is the title starts with an asterisk, doesn't it?
It does. It does. So it's
not on this screen.
Not on this screen. But Batteries Not Included. I saw that at the cinema.
Me too. So did I. Yeah.
But I think my mum picked us up after school. We went to Parkwood Primary School by Finsbury Park, and she picked us up from there, and then we went to the Hammersmith Odeon. Hammersmith Odeon? It wasn't Hammersmith Odeon. It
Apollo?
Was Holloway Odeon.
Holloway Odeon. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think we went in 20 minutes late, and in the lobby there was a huge cardboard cutout for Stakeout.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With Emilio Estevez and Richard Dreyfuss under a bed looking up at Madeleine Stowe's legs. And I remember that from being, what, sperm. I was five. Five or six. And... yeah, I remember all that. Batteries Not Included. Wow, my love for Brad Bird. I didn't actually like Batteries Not Included. At the time, even I thought, this is bollocks.
It's been such a long time, I wouldn't like to have an opinion on it.
It was just really sort of sentimental, and I did find that. Did you hear that fact about Wilfred Brimley from Cocoon?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
That Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible Fallout is 5 years older than Wilfred Brimley in Cocoon.
I know he's younger than he looks, because I think he's not that old in like The Thing as well, either, is he? I think he is, like, he's in his 50s.
No, but he's always looked old. He's always looked like an old man. He looks exactly the same as he does in The Thing as he does in Hard Target, which was made 13 years later.
Yes, yeah.
Right? And so you kind of go, right, Wilfred Brimley's always been an old man.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise has always been a young man. And still is. Seemingly still is. That's what I wrote on Twitter. I was like saying, yeah, back in the day, you know, when you had your OAPs. Back in the day when you had your OAPs, they had to play old and decrepit people like they did in Cocoon.
Yes.
But now we like to see our OAPs hanging off the side of helicopters. We love it. We love it.
Wilford
Brimley's 83. He is now.
Whenever I see Wilford
And he is
Brimley.
5 years younger than Tom Cruise, who's 88.
If I've understood
the internet correctly.
I immediately think of Wilford Brimley from... what's he called? Wilford Bramble from Steptoe and Son.
Of course. Well, Tom Cruise is 5 years older than him.
Him now.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's lapped him. Brimley has supported advertisements
these
to
aren't
have
all
Utah allow horse-race gambling.
These aren't all useful facts that you're typing up for us here. So Incredibles 2, Brad Bird, you love it. Stop looking at the screen. I need you in the room.
It keeps changing.
I haven't seen the film. Stop it, Natalie. Bloody hell, it's like herding gnats.
Yes.
He's back.
Back in the room.
Can't believe I'm not doing Edinburgh. I could have opened with that, put that in the middle and closed. Just a bit of filler.
On the first night.
Closed on the first night. I've been nothing but supportive.
No, you have. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The Incredibles 2 is totally...
Just news just in, Brimley enjoys playing poker. Fucking hell,
probably,
Natalie!
I reckon that's probably why he tried to overturn horse racing laws in Utah. That's my guess.
This is absolute... We've burned 11 minutes of everyone's lives that have listened
to this.
He's also
a Mormon.
If you are listening to this live, as we're performing this live, Brimley is a Mormon. Tom Cruise is a Scientologist, obviously, Brimley would have probably been a Scientologist had it been around when he was in his early 20s, starring in films such as Cocoon. Now, he spoke against banning the cockfighting in New Mexico. Of course he did. Classic Brimmels.
An accomplished harmonica player.
Yeah, and he also gave Harry H. Corbett a thing or two, didn't he?
Certainly did. And he's Paul McCartney's granddad, isn't he, in A Hard Day's Night?
He is. A terrible cameo. It just really slows the film down every time he is.
Yeah.
He's very clean, isn't he? He's very clean. Have you noticed that, John? He's very clean.
Well, it's one of my favourite bits.
Well, the bit when he's clean and John Lennon is sniffing coke.
Yeah.
He's got a bottle of Coca-Cola and he's sniffing it. And you go, oh, that's very clever for the 60s, isn't it? This, not for the 60s, but it's very subversive.
It's very knowing, isn't it? Very subversive.
You think, oh, God, you
that's your old tricks, John.
Bloody hell, John, you're one step ahead of everyone.
So you want a revolution? Yes, please.
You got that past the censors, didn't you? Sniffing on the old Coca-Cola. I tell you what I watched the other day, Demons. Have you seen Demons?
Yeah.
They do a similar joke where the bad guys... Well, you say he's a bad guy, he's not a bad guy. You say he's a bad guy, Nat. You haven't had a word in. You say he's a bad guy, but he's not really. He's just driving around and they keep all of their cocaine in a Coca-Cola can with a straw in it and they're passing it around the car and they keep sniffing through the straw. Which is basically pinched from a John Lennon improv from A Hard Day's Night. So that's something to
That's fan club.
It's a bit of a shame when films feel the need to steal bits from others. Mm. Speaking of which, I saw Hereditary last night.
Oh, I've not seen it.
So what would you give Incredibles 2?
Incredibles 2? It's like... I'd say like a... Like a 7.
Well, one word review in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Pleasing.
Not as good as the original?
No.
They're not, though.
No.
Finding Dory was a pale imitator
it's nice
to Finding
people,
Nemo.
And I really like Holly Hunter and things. It's nice to see them all again. There they are.
It's great.
They're all back.
I love, what's his name? Craig T. Nelson.
Me too, yeah.
He's fucking wicked.
Well, I think that's the casting they've got.
Him and Joe Beth Williams in Poltergeist, they're like my 80s screen parents.
Yes,
you know, I just think they're the best. They're the best screen parents of the entire, well, I think I've already said it, 1980s. And I love those two in Poltergeist. I love them too as a couple in Poltergeist more than I like Poltergeist. But I do like Poltergeist.
I was worried you were going to say your own parents.
No, not my own parents. They're legends.
Of course.
No, I'm going to get them veneered one day.
Oh, yeah.
I love, but I went to see Hereditary last night, which I'd heard everyone going on about. I went to the cinema twice yesterday. I went to see Vertigo.
Oh, yes.
At the BFI, which is my favourite. Cineworld, Leicester Square is my favourite cinema.
Okay.
But the BFI is just, I could
good
spend...
Good place to see Vertigo.
I could spend £1,000 in the BFI shop in 2 minutes. So I have to go in, take photos of it, buy it off Amazon later. That's what I would do. But I love the BFI and the BFI shop and everything that they show at the BFI. And I love it. I love it so much.
I love it. It's a great place to be.
I went to see Vertigo yesterday in a pack. You know, 1958 it was mm-hmm. made. You know, there are all these films where people say, oh, I wasn't born then. Of course I've not seen it. You know, yeah. So like, well, I wasn't born in 1933 or whenever, you know...
King Kong,
Bride of Frankenstein, Wizard of Oz. I wasn't born. I've seen those films. I've seen Mary Poppins. You know, I've seen Sound of Music. You don't have to have been born within the lifespan of... The film doesn't have to come out within your lifespan. It's not Quantum Leap. So I saw Vertigo yesterday, which was, what, 70 years ago? 1958?
God, it is now, isn't it? Doesn't time fly? No, it isn't. 60.
60?
60, yeah.
58, 68, 78, 98, 98, 2008, 2018. Oh, yeah, 60 years. You heard it here first, fan club. Join the club, the counting club, the counting house, every day at 1:15. Ten past one. Nathaniel Metcalf. anyway, I'd love to talk to you about Hereditary, but we'll just do that on another episode.
Have we got our guest is here?
We've got to play a song first, then, haven't we? Our guest is here. Hereditary, basically, Vertigo, still, it's officially the best film. It's rated the best film ever made.
Love it, absolutely.
It's overtaken Citizen Kane for the number one spot about maybe 10 years ago. And it's fucking incredible.
Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal.
Just visually, it's such a slow film. I forgot how slow it was, and I remembered things in a different order. I thought that the big plot twist happened about 20 minutes into the film, but it doesn't. It happens about an hour and 20 minutes into the film, or 2 hours into the film.
Lots of greens in it, isn't there?
Lots of green in it. It's just, yeah, the car is green, and I think that they do that spirally, spinny thing with James Stewart's face pulling it. It's like the Batman logo. It's just so visually
but talk about something that's ahead of its time. It's also got sort of weird sex stuff in it. It's completely bonkers.
You've got lovely James Stewart, who's basically playing kind of like James Stewart at first, and then he deteriorates into this crazed sort of sex,
and he's like a horrible guy in it. But he's the hero
yeah. It's such a good film. It's really complicated, and you can't really do it justice in 3 seconds before the thing. And then I saw Hereditary, which had been told to me by Brett Goldstein that it was the scariest film that he'd ever seen. And fucking hell, it was fine. But it stole off every horror film that you've ever seen, it stole from. And it's like it couldn't decide what sort of horror film wanted to be.
The impression I get from it is that it's trying to be like a legitimate horror film, so it's trying to steal from The Shining and The Exorcist.
It steals from Shining, Exorcist, Rosemary's Baby, anything with a child in it, anything with possession in it, a Ouija board, Poltergeist, The Virgin Suicides. It's like a Wes Anderson film. What's the other one? Fucking Amityville Horror. You know, it's just like everything. Exorcist 3, right, which I haven't even seen, but I read up on it. And you just like go, but it steals off absolutely everything. And you just like go, well, but totally ill-fitting. I was like describing it yesterday to my friend. It's like you've done after it. None of the bits really connect that easily, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes like films like The Shining, where you come out and you have to analyse it, and the bits don't connect that easily. You kind of like go, oh yeah, but you put it down to Stanley Kubrick being a genius. But with this, it's like you've got 8 jigsaw puzzles all scattered over a table, and you can put some pieces together over here, and you can put some pieces together over here, and you can put some pieces together over here. But when you put them all together, they don't fit together.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of like
it's borrowing from all those kind of very critically acclaimed horror films that you're allowed to like. as well. It seems a bit like safe. Do
but
you know what
none
I mean?
Of those films kind of like live in the same universe as each other.
Yeah.
You've got a Ouija board film, fine. And you've got like a ghost child film, and you go, fine. And then you've got kind of like a possession film, you go, fine. And then you've got kind of like a murderer. It's just like none of the stuff really fits together. And yeah, I was so disappointed with it. Anyway, here's a song.
Wrote a song, it was wrong from its very first conception. Seemed I struggled on every line. It wasn't fast, wasn't pretty, wasn't serious or witty. The song that didn't rhyme. The band couldn't wing it, the singer couldn't sing it. The drummer's always out of time. The DJs were offended, my union card suspended. Billboard declared it a crime. The melody blows in a key that no one can find. The lyrics don't flow, but I can't get it out of my mind. A 3 minute waste of your time on a song that didn't rhyme. It was bland, it was boring, all the groupies there were snoring. The first time we played it live, all the record guys got fired, the president retired, but somehow the song survived.
Joey Page.
It's now time to welcome into the studio.
We've heard, there's other shows.
Joey.
I love Joey Page. Joey Page is a master, but we're not listening to the Joey Page show right now. We're listening to Nick and
Matt.
Fan Club. Come on, mate.
Fan Club.
You're leaving me hanging this episode. Just get Edinburgh out of your mind. I know you've got to rush off straight after this show, but, you know, I know you've got to get on the... you've got to get yourself to Caledonian Road. Get the Piccadilly line down to King's Cross.
Yeah.
You've got to wait for your train to Edinburgh. Yeah. Get on the Edinburgh train.
A flying Scotsman.
Get all the way up to Edinburgh. Get off at...
Edinburgh Waverley Station.
Edinburgh Waverley Station and get your way all the way down to the Counting House.
Exactly.
And do your show at 1:10 every day. It's great that you're commuting in, though.
It's
so expensive, isn't it, renting a place out in Edinburgh?
It sure is.
So we're joined in the studio now.
I might as well stay here.
We're joined in the studio now, Nat, by by my friend and yours, Mr. Richard Sandling.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Richard?
Very well, thank you.
It's good to have you in the studio.
It's good to be here.
I think Nat would agree that we probably both owe our entire careers to you.
We do.
I'm so sorry.
I know.
I need
to have a word with you about mine.
No, so you used to run Perfect Movie down in Piccadilly.
Yeah.
And Perfect Movie was a show where basically a whole generation of comedians, wasn't it? There was me, you, James Acaster, Josh Widdicombe, others. There were others.
Paul F. Taylor, soon to be a guest on...
Well, we don't know what order they're going to... it's all live. but what would happen was it once a month? It started out once a fortnight, wasn't
it? It started off... Yeah, I think it was monthly to start with because I didn't know if it would work or not.
Yeah.
This is before... It's 2009, I think, was the first one. It was the first show.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine a time when nerddom hadn't saturated through
yeah,
all
exactly.
of it.
So
having a show where comedians could talk about things they were enthusiastic about rather than dickhead 20s to earn the money was like, everyone's like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, I want to talk about things I like talking about, which was really unheard of at the time.
It was great. Yeah, so when was it? 2009?
2009 was
the
first
one.
I've got a DVD of the first one.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing my Rambo routine and the Bricky from Better Ricky stuff.
Yeah.
I've got it. And I was shouting at someone really important. I didn't know anything, and there was a guy in the audience, and I was like laying into him, calling him a cunt and everything. And it was like, oh, you're a head of a TV company. Yeah, of course.
Because I did that, I used to film it as well, to do like put the 10 minute bits of it
online.
I loved
that. I thought it was brilliant.
And you're looking back now, and there's like, you can see like people who I'm now friends with. I'm like, oh, that's the first time they turned up to the show. And then being the sort of show was, like, we'd all just hang out in the bar afterwards because it wasn't one of those like performers and audience excluded.
It was like,
you know,
a die hard audience, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What's the name of the pub? It's next to
Old Queen's Head.
Was the Queen's the Queen's the Queen's Head or the Old Queen's Head to start with, wasn't it? The one down sort of on Shaftesbury.
Then it moved to Amazing Cider Bar.
Yeah, the Green Man.
The Green Man. That's right.
I remember
the Green Man was so good because they'd do a pint which was 8%.
Special seller. It looked like lime juice. It looked like someone had made a lime cordial. That's how sort of green and sort of see through it was.
And it tasted like flat Lucozade. Yeah. and I remember that I could drink one pint of it and do my gig, but if I drank a pint and a half of it, I was too drunk and I'd never be able to do it. They were always worse. But I used to do it every gig, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah. For two years, you were the regular guest.
I did, every single one of them. And I did a new material every week or every time we did it. But it gave me kind of the confidence and the ability to write a lot of material about things that happened around me while I was doing it. So I'd sort of like, I'd make a list of stuff. Like, I'd go see Terminator Salvation. I remember I did a thing about Terminator Salvation. And then I'd have like a routine about it. And you'd use it for, when Leslie Nielsen died, I did sort of like a tribute to Leslie Nielsen and stuff. And I just remember that show sort of gave me the confidence to generate and write material. So, I mean, thank you very much for doing it. It was an amazing show.
Thank you as well.
Yeah,
I loved it so much. I'm a fan of Richard Tanner's Perfect Movie.
Yeah, what I liked about it was that it was one of those things. Goes, oh, it's the kind of gig where you can just come in and talk about films instead of what you normally talk about, and then go, that's what I do about in my stand up.
Anyway. Yeah, yeah.
I'm doing it wrong, I think.
That was one of the things. Yeah, because I remember the advice I was given when I first started stand up was, talk about what you know. And I sort of completely sort of misinterpreted that as like, you know, in the 100% embrace that as only talk about like videos.
Yeah, sure.
And like, you know, you can talk about other things. No, I only know about, you know, I sort of completely misinterpreted the advice to.
Yeah, but people thought that you used to actually run a VHS video shot, didn't they?
It was a sort of one of those like, because it's when it didn't matter, you know, when it didn't have to matter if you weren't 100% honest with your sort of stage persona, because you just go, well, I run a video shop. No one can tell that's not true. And that was like the bit, but also because it was me, people didn't know if it was a character. You know, so it was.
Yeah, you build up your own mythology, don't you?
Sure, but people still lie.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not lying; it's an act.
Yes, even if you're
Jimmy Carr doesn't talk in one-liners in real life.
Yeah, if you're a straight stand-up, it's still technically a character, even if you're not a character.
It's always a character. Whatever you see on stage is always. It can be very close to you. It can be, but you're presenting everything in a certain.
When you get on stage, you are like, you have a stage persona that you don't even know you have, like when you start to do comedy, because how you are on stage isn't how you want to be on stage necessarily.
No, I think it just develops in this kind of weird, like, you can't, I don't think you can predict what kind of comedian you'll be when you start.
No,
I didn't think I was going to be a shouty cunt that went around swearing at people. I didn't think I was going to be like that. That developed really organically based on audience reactions.
Well, and also when we I suppose when we started, we were it's before the sort of massive like boom of it, where people were doing it not cynically, that's the wrong word, but doing it with like half an eye on the ending. Whereas we sort of did it as like a hobby or just as a thing to like do in our spare time.
There was
almost catharsis and therapy. More than
Well, my original goal was just to make travel back.
Yeah,
you know, if I could get to the gig and get travel and then go home again, I could do my office job every day. Yeah. I could do that and I'd be, and I'd go, I can handle the office job because I know that every evening I've got 20 minutes to do and I can make my travel.
That's one of the reasons why whenever I start, I used to put a shouty bit in my set just so that I'd have a reason to scream every day. So that's like the sort of primal scream therapy. Every time I do a set, there's always a bit in my set where I shout or scream. So I know I literally would put a bit in. So however my set evolves, there'll always be a bit where I scream, just so that I can scream that I have a reason to scream without bothering anyone.
I used to do what was that? I used to do like an admin job in Hatfield at the Hatfield Business Park, and in between when no one was looking, I would write like a song or a musical or an Edinburgh show. And I used to go, oh, this is not bad. I'm getting paid to write. It sort of took a bit of the edge off how depressed I was.
Yeah. You think, I've just been... Am I temping or am I being paid to write a screenplay?
I'm being paid to write a hit musical. That was 2008, I think.
There was something a bit different about like the open mic circuit then as well, because there was lots of people who absolutely weren't trying to make a career of it. And it was much more sort of oddballs and... really interesting characters and things about.
I was a very lonely person, and when I started doing stand-up, I finally found a group of people that I had a lot in common with.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? And people from completely different backgrounds that you would never... that if you probably met in an office job, you would probably be like, I'm not going to get on with them because they're into different things.
In
stand-up, I think everyone's got this something that's very similar.
In that office job, they used to go on and on and on about comedy, but it would always be comedians that I didn't necessarily like. And it would be the most popular comedians of the time. Mm-hmm. And they'd be talking about comedy, and you'd be there going, I could actually contribute to this conversation. But they've never shown any interest in me whatsoever. So I just always keep my head down and be really quiet. And then years later, I did Russell Howard's Good News, or I did something, maybe it was Uncle. And then one of them got in contact saying, we didn't know that you were doing that. And it's just like, well, nobody ever asked me. Do you know what I mean? In the evenings, it would be like you were, in a way, sort of like Batman. Yeah. In the evenings, you'd go off and do jokes in Leicester Square. And then by day, you'd be a mild-mannered admin operator.
Yeah.
And Richard, you have gone from doing comedy about films to appearing in a film.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I'm now...
You've absolutely smashed that. Now,
thank you.
See what happens when you're in the room and you're enjoying the moment.
See?
Instead of worrying about your show, which is on in 40
Metcalf,
minutes.
They call it. Segway Metcalf.
Absolutely great stuff there, man. I'm like proud of you.
It's like a portmanteau. Just straight through to the next section.
We've gone off topic now, haven't we?
We have. I mean, we're going to need another segue to get back to that bloody segue. Oh, that's the problem with segues. Anyway, Richard, tell us about Night Shooters.
Wow. I have been fortunate enough to be in some films before. This is not my first film, but this is
a new one.
This
right?
is a new one that's coming out in sort of around September-ish time, mm-hmm. and it's my first gangland boss character.
Oh, yeah, really?
I play my first geezer with a shooter.
Nice.
Full 90s Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Obviously not qualitatively. I'm not an arrogant man. But I'm definitely trying to be as loud as 90s Gary Oldman.
Yeah, right, sure.
You know,
nice.
The proper send everyone.
And you've got to keep the beard.
I have to keep the beard all the time. So,
why?
Is this your bread and butter now?
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is I trimmed the beard, and then after I did Night Shooters, I filmed a Western. So I had to film the Western, which took place over sporadically, which I also wrote the Western, and, co-wrote. And then I'm doing another film in September where I need to be big and hairy. Basically, everyone keeps going, oh, you need to be big and hairy, keep the beard. And then
so you have to keep the beard.
I just forever have to keep the beard. So it's like,
great. You're very lucky that you've got two streaks of white.
Bit of Brock, bit of Brock in the middle.
And also it adds, because you're a relatively young man. You're the same age as me, aren't you?
Yeah.
I say relatively young man. Yeah. Now I'm thinking about it. I was thinking you're awfully young for a gangland boss, but actually maybe we're...
Yeah.
You were at the premiere of the original Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, me and Wilfred Brimley.
Yeah. Oh God, that's come on, mate.
I've just had an existential crisis about my age.
You're either thinking about your Edinburgh show. Oh fucking hell, this very
the meltdown.
I don't know what it's like for you listeners, but but in here we're in a very dark pit of despair.
Well, we're all in our late 30s, but could play younger.
Hey Nat, keep it light.
Yeah. I didn't have a realisation. I
can't believe I'm the beacon of fucking positivity today.
I realised the other day that I can't even afford to have a midlife crisis. That's something I realised.
But it seems like that's quite overachieving, isn't it, to be a gangland boss in your late 30s?
Yeah, well, you know, when you've either got it or you haven't. Yeah. You know, so,
you can't just turn up one day and become a gangland boss, can you?
No.
I tell you what, I was thinking about this the other day. I was on the South Bank, and they were doing a play about Moss Side, and it was about like how terrible it was growing up in Moss Side. It sounded quite patronising because it was basically a bunch of actors, you know, well-to-do actors that have done acting. I don't know. I'm making a lot of assumptions, but there was a thing about Moss Side, and I was just kind of like, all right. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting? Because you know how many people really hate what they've done with the Star Wars franchise. You just redo Star Wars, but you set it in kind of like the streets of Manchester. And you've got a guy who's lives in Moss Side, Moss Isley. And it doesn't have to be. There was an old joke on the circuit. Someone used to do that. But he was like, so the main character in this play was like going, oh, God, I know it's like I can't afford to get out of where I'm living and I don't want to live in the streets that I'm living in. All I want to do is get away from where. And you just like go, that's Luke Skywalker,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you go, well,
it'd be like the RAF he wants to get into.
Wants to get in the RAF. But but we're all being dictated to by evil Donald Trump, mm-hmm. or Theresa May, mm-hmm. right? And he's sort of like, or the second in command. And basically, you just do it all. And there's like a local gangster, and you meet, do you know what I mean? You could redo it all. And then, so you do Star Wars, then you do Empire Strikes Back, then you do Return of the Jedi, then you do A Force Awakens, right? Then you can fix The Last Jedi on a budget. You just tell the exact same story with the but in real world.
It's nice, I did it like an Alan Bleasdale's Star Wars.
You do it like
Wars.
A kid. I think that it would be a good thing for us three to get together and write as a kitchen sink drama and take it up to Edinburgh one year.
You have Alder shot.
Yes.
Yeah, but the trick would be to sell it as an actual play as opposed to this is Star Wars.
Yeah.
So the trick would be that you'd go in and you'd trick a bunch of theatre goers into thinking it's a gritty, urban kind of kitchen sink drama play.
And then at the end say, oh, we've got you. It was just Star Wars.
No, I don't think you even need to tell them. I think it's a story that you could transpose. And then eventually you'll be able to fix all the things you didn't like about the prequels and the sequels. Yeah, I don't know how you do the Ewoks, but
it'd have to be allegorical, wouldn't it?
Anyway,
the idea of him just turning up, though. Yeah.
This isn't what the show's normally about, is it? We should have asked you what you're into. But go on, just tell us what Night Shooters is about.
So Night Shooters is a film about a bunch of filmmakers who are making a low budget movie who go into an abandoned like warehouse to film some stuff like on the sly to make a zombie movie, and while they're there they don't, that's because I own that and I'm going to demolish that building in the morning. I use that as a place to do some gangland executions, and then we realise they've witnessed it and filmed it, so we have to go and kill them because they're witnesses and get the cameras back.
Late night urban adventure film.
Yes,
it's basically a bit like Trespass.
It's Trespass. It's like Judgment Night.
Yeah. The
Judgment
Warriors.
Judgment Night meets Blow Up.
I mean,
which is what I say to you, because you'll appreciate it more than Goonies meets the Poseidon Adventure.
I mean, we've done the spoiler button, but it should have been Boner Alert, really. Yeah. It sounds like an absolutely fantastic film.
And it was really Mark Price, the director, who did Colin, the zombie film.
Oh, so he himself is someone who makes zombie films on the cheap.
So he's really good at structure. So like when you watch it, it makes complete sense that a gang can't kill seven filmmakers. Do you know, like, it's not you watch these movies, you watch films, and you're like, there's three of you. Why is it taking 2 hours for someone to not kill three people who aren't assassins? Like, but this actually makes quite, because it's going to be blown up the next day. You can't fire guns because you blow up the the dynamite, you know, the, there's always lots of plot specific things which make complete sense.
Yes.
I'll certainly watch it, Richard, but I am anticipating plot holes.
Yeah. You'd be surprised.
That's great.
You get to see me scream a lot and punch someone, and you know.
And your character is called Tarka. Is that because he's like Tarka the Otter?
I don't know. I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that there's a sort of Ring of Bright Water.
Yeah.
So is Tarka the Otter and Ring of Bright Water two separate things?
Yes, I think.
Does Tarka the Otter get brutally murdered at the end, or is it just...
I think he does get...
No, they can't do that in every Otter movie. There's a whole spate of late 70s, early 80s children's films about otters getting brutally murdered.
Do you have, like, a Guy Ritchie freeze frame where it's like, this is Tarka, because he's an otter bastard? Or something. And he has a freeze frame, and then the snow goes, and this is Donkey. Donkey! Smash, and
I'll suggest it for the Blu-ray special features.
Yeah, do it.
This is Bill. We call him the full English. That's because every time he kills a geezer, he eats a full English.
This is Reggie. Reggie the Veggie. Why?
That's because I once saw him eating an apple.
Hips and all.
Stick a carrot up his victim's ass.
Mugs Bunny.
I tell you what I watched the other day. I watched Sexy Beast, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In my head, right, Sexy Beast was... So I saw Sexy Beast maybe 20 years ago with my mum. To be fair to her, she fucking loved it, right? And I haven't seen it since, but I have seen... what's the other one? Come on.
What, the film he made?
No, the other one that's like Sexy Beast.
Oh.
Colin Farrell.
Oh, In Bruges?
In Bruges, right. So in my head, Sexy Beast and In Bruges were almost the same film.
Right.
Right? Where you've got, like, Ben Kingsley turns up as a psychopath that swears a lot, and then you've got Ralph Fiennes who turns up, and they were both in Schindler's List, which I only worked out recently. And then you've got, it's not like a British... I think In Bruges is a really underrated film. I love it so much. I don't think it is underrated, but I don't think enough people realise how good it is, right? Mm. I think everyone that sees it realises it's good, is what I mean. It's like, there's not a load of people that have seen it and don't think it's good. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone thinks it's good.
And Sexy Beast is a very similar type thing, right?
It's nothing like it at all. Sexy Beast, I rewatched it the other day, and it's absolutely nothing like In Bruges. It's kind of like, structurally it's totally different. You could say that it shares a bit of the same DNA, but it's basically...
Do you not like Sexy Beast?
I loved Sexy Beast when I saw it, and in my memory, but I don't think it's aged well. It feels like it's very theatrical.
Yeah, it's quite sort of almost absurdist without being actually absurdist, isn't it?
A lot of it's very stagey, like it could be in a theatre, you know, as in, you know, the bit where he goes, I'm having the calamari, what are you having? I'm having the chicken thing. Well, chicken thing? I didn't even see a chicken thing. No, I'm having the calamari. You know, it was all sort of like, it was almost like vaudeville, you know, the way
I think what helps with Sexy Beast is that it's kind of like, it is really well written. Like,
but it's very much British, you know, Cool Britannia, British version of a Quentin Tarantino film, you know?
But it is also having proper actors in it helps a lot. You know, I consider Ray Winston to be a proper actor. Yeah, having Ray Winston and Ben Kingsley sort of doing that, Ian McShane, and it helps make it seem less sort of geezery and stupid and flippant, you know.
That calamari scene doesn't actually seem stupid.
It raises the bar, doesn't it? You know, you're watching a proper film rather than something.
Well, yeah, but they've almost got Ray Winston to play against type.
Yeah, well, I think he was originally up for the Don part, and he said like, Do I always have to be like the psycho? Can I? Essentially, he said, can I be the romantic lead? So I think he envisages Gary as the romantic lead.
And so they go, right, well, who can we get who can out geezer?
Yeah. Well, apparently, that was apparently his line was, who's playing Don? We've got Ben Kingsley. Ben Kingsley, I'm going to get slapped about by fucking Gandhi.
He asked for it, though.
Yeah. I liked it because he got nominated for an Oscar, didn't he, Ben Kingsley? Best Supporting Actor.
For Sexy Beast.
And, like, it was one of those things where.
Beast!
And you should have watched
Hang
the
on,
Oscar.
One more.
Yeah.
For Sexy Beast!
Can you do it higher?
For Sexy Beast!
And it's amazing when you see the Oscars, because I think there was like some really solid supporting actor bits that year, and you've got like Jim Broadbent, I think it might be for Iris or something, just giving a proper like, Oscar. And all because it's just so much bad language, all you do is you just cuts to Ben Kingsley going, you will. And it's like, is that what, because like, they couldn't show any other clip of, he's like, nominated, they couldn't show any of his performance.
Yeah, I think that was one of my post-university films that I watched with my mum. I just always remember, I never really used to swear before university, and we were watching Gordon's Kitchen Nightmares or something. We were all around the TV as a family watching something fucking, you know. And I was like, oh, he's such a cunt. That's what I said. And my sister went, Nicholas, don't say that. And my mum turned to me and she goes, he is a bit of a cunt though, isn't he?
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was really sweet. And then after that we watched Sexy Beast together and she lapped it up. She thought Ben Kingsley's performance, if anything, was underplayed.
That's nice. It's like for years she was trying not to swear in front of you in case it corrupted you.
Yeah.
And then as soon as she heard you break for a minute, she's like, I've been waiting all my life for this. Wait 20 years for this.
It was a real tender mother-son moment.
It's a beautiful story.
And to be fair, maybe that's where my stage persona got born. That was the moment when I just thought, Mum likes the word cunt. Maybe I'll make a career out of saying that. We've said it so many times in this episode, I'll stop saying it now. It does turn a lot of people off when they're listening to it out loud in their offices.
That's Fan Club.
That's Fan Cunt. So, right, okay, we've got to play a song now. What have you brought in with you?
Well, I've got a song called All We Ever Wanted Was Everything by Bauhaus.
Okay, and this goes to people in the studio and people at home. If you don't want to listen to the song, have a wee.
Oh,
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Oh, I'm just having such a great day today. Because we're back in the studio live at 5. It was mid-noon. And, we've got like 20 minutes until Nathaniel's show, so we're just basically killing time for...
if anything, can I leave a bit early?
No. Okay. No, it's unprofessional. Okay. I think we're going to go right up to the wire today. Richard, Sexy Beast, Winstone showed the script to Gary Oldman in view of having him play Don, but he wasn't up for it.
Mm. Which isn't fair enough. Considering he was in Nil by Mouth as well, you'd think he'd probably...
He did him a solid.
Did him a solid.
As you'd say. Yeah. He probably got paid a monkey.
Yeah, he did.
Which is a £1 billion. how early do you have to get up when you're filming Night Shooters?
Well, it was a night shoot, so it was incredibly... Well, I like night shoots. I'd rather film all night than have to get up at 5 in the morning to go and film for a day.
I absolutely agree with you. I'm all right when I get up. Yeah, I tweet in the morning and people say, "You're up early," you know, and it's just kind of like, what do you think I do for a living? I'm getting up at fucking 5 o'clock every morning. I'm not going to fucking... The day doesn't start when you fucking join me, Doris. So you're doing. So what would you do? What would be the day?
We filmed in Denham, which is sort of just past Watford. So I drive to this. It was actually filmed in an abandoned building.
I filmed in Denham once. It was a jacket and a pair of jeans.
Hey!
Lovely stuff.
It is good. I liked it. I've realised as well that that's why it's probably called night shooters, yeah. Right? It's a clever play on words.
They've got shooters. Yeah.
Shooters.
I think,
and you're also doing a night shoot.
I think this is the sort of film that really does reward repeated viewings.
It does.
And much like Trespass.
Yeah. Judgment Night.
Which
the
is
what
Trespass is one of the films. That is one of the few films starring Devereaux White, who is the chauffeur in Die Hard. I think he's the
guy.
He's the junkie, isn't he?
Oh yeah, but it's also got the guy from Die Hard 2.
Yeah, the guy too's the well,
who's
not
got
the
voice?
The caretaker.
Who's not a very good actor? But he's in the Annex Tower. That's what he meant.
Yeah.
You know, from Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
That's Fan Club.
But it's got a guy from Die Hard 1. It's got a guy from Die Hard 2. Both of the Ices and both of the Bills. It's an absolutely amazing film.
It is.
Walter Hill.
Fireman decided to go on a treasure hunt.
It's one of those films that I used to watch on, like... They used to often show it about midnight on a Friday or something, when the cool people would have been out, but I would have been, what's this? And I remember like seeing it like, but this should be a film everyone knows about, right? It was like a massive film.
It was my gateway to much better Walter Hill films. Bullets in the Head. Bullet to the Head. No. Bullet in the Head. That's a terrible film.
But this one of those, you know, but that would have been a contemporary film, wouldn't it? So
have you seen the fucking Escape Plan 2?
Yeah.
It's had a cinematic release.
Yes, yes.
Starring Oscar-winning Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
One star in Empire.
Is it Sylvester Stallone?
It's 80 minutes long.
Oh, yeah?
And the first minute 20 is just the slogans of the co-producers. You know, like...
Oh, wow.
Like pictures of the co-producer logo. It's just a minute 20 of logos.
I thought the first Escape Plan was bollocks. I mean, well, I
enjoyed it, but in a way that you kind of go, I enjoyed it.
But Sylvester Stallone has made Lock Up and he's made Tango and Cash, which are both prison break movies, right? And I mean, Escape Plan was kind of like, if they'd set it in a real prison...
Escape to Victory as well, you know, like...
Escape to Victory. But if they'd set it in a real prison, that's great. But they've got all of these guys wearing kind of theatre masks. I just thought it was such bollocks. Although, tragically, a career best performance from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
He was so good in it. It was just such a bollocks film. Don't make a sequel to that.
He's really good, Schwarzenegger, now that he sort of... Not doesn't have to try, but actually, like, you know, it doesn't have to be like, I'm 35 and I'm the hardest man in the world, and
well,
just
he can't
be like,
be.
You know, so exactly. But now he's realised that he's just going, I'm going to sort of Clint Eastwood it a bit.
He can't compete with the Fast and Furious movies.
No.
So you just like, well, what's he doing? He's got a fucking act now.
Yeah.
And you go, fucking hell, he's in trouble. But, and he's great. He's like JCVD.
I think it's a shame that he didn't get. I wanted him to have that kind of post political career when there was all rumours of him like, oh, they're going to do King Conan. I was always like, oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
When you get to have, like, films that are, like, built on to have, like, an older Arnie in them. Yeah. Just think that'd be a really nice career.
I would see The Last Stand at Leicester Square Odeon, which is now closed because it was the one in the corner, on a Friday night to see The Last Stand, me and Stuart Laws.
And it was opening night, right?
It was the opening night, and there was me and Stuart Laws. We took a photo in the cinema, me and Stuart Laws and three other people. In a maybe a 700-seater, 1,000-seater. It was huge, huge cinema. There was five people in there on a Friday night. Yeah. And I was absolutely gutted because I was so excited about... and I actually thought it was a good film.
Well, I think the last... For me, like, talking about the Conan, King Conan, I think I liked it, but I almost wish it had been slightly more realistic. Do you know that, like, The Last Stand was actually more like, I'm just a small-town sheriff? You know, like, it wasn't...
Yeah.
But, you know, if you could have had the same sort of story, but it's more like a sort of...
it was an ensemble piece.
Almost like a sort
of
Rocky Balboa vibe to it, rather than... just because I would like to see a Schwarzenegger do more, like, sort of low-key carnage.
But I don't think the film with Johnny Knoxville playing a guy with special needs that owns a load of guns is the film to do it in.
It's 5-2.
It's 5-2. When you're filming night shooters, what time do you get up in the evening?
I would get up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
4 o'clock in the afternoon. Then you go to set.
Yep.
Then what happens?
We would film in a room which had no plumbing or electricity and run everything off a generator and have to wear thermals because it was cold.
Winter or summer? Winter. So it was cold in there.
Yeah, it was cold and the nights went on. It was dark when you get up and dark when you get home.
Yeah. And?
And then we would film, we'd go outside, we'd scream at each other, we'd shoot blanks and have kung fu fights. And
then what time would you
And then we'd finish
wrap?
At 6 in the morning.
6 in the morning, and then you'd go to what bed?
I'd go home to Essex to my own bed.
Yeah, and then you'd sleep until 4.
Sleep until 4.
Very much like a vampire. Or a vampire.
Is that what I was building up to?
No, it's just I just wanted to know how it goes. Trespass was written years earlier by a pre-Back to the Future Robert Zemeckis, which makes sense because he went on to do Demon Knight and Robert. He produced the Bordello of Blood, which were the Tales from the Crypt Keeper movies.
Also Walter Hill.
They were also Walter Hill and starring Bill Paxton, or Bill Pullman was in one of them. Right, we've got to play the game now. I'm just going to find the button and go.
So this is better or worse, where you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before it, Richard. Okay, starting with Dean Martin. Is Sammy Davis Jr. better or worse than Dean Martin?
Oh, worse.
He's better.
No, he's not.
He's not, you cunt.
He's fucking...
He's better than anyone
Martin
except Dean Martin.
Is Frank Sinatra better or worse than Sammy Davis Jr.?
Worse. He's worse.
He's worse.
Yeah. He used to eat steaks with steak knives off of strippers' stomachs. He was an absolute monster.
Is Drew Barrymore better or worse than Frank Sinatra?
Better.
I'd say worse.
Everyone is better than Frank Sinatra.
Is Daniel Day-Lewis better or worse than Drew Barrymore?
Worse.
Better. Daniel Day-Lewis is
better.
Great. Both really encapsulate their roles.
Is Jeremy Irons better or worse than Daniel Day-Lewis?
Worse,
because he had some questionable things about immigration.
Yes, worse. Is Alan Rickman better or worse than Jeremy Irons?
Better. It's on film for everyone to see.
Is Michael Keaton better or worse than Alan Rickman?
Oh, worse, but it's not much in it.
No, there's a lot in it, but we still like Michael Keaton, Alan Rickman is too good.
Correct. He is worse than Alan Rickman. Is Burt Reynolds better or worse than Michael Keaton?
Oh, worse.
Yeah, what's worse?
He is worse. Is Bob Dylan better or worse than Burt Reynolds?
Better.
He is.
Ooh.
Okay.
I don't know. Well,
controversial. Better or worse.
I wasn't sure what the parameters were.
It's all based on my own opinion.
Yeah, that was really a fucked up episode of.
And
of
you
better
scored
or worse.
Six.
I'm so angry about that. I'm fucking furious about that, Nathaniel.
There's
some real odd choices in that, and I'm not going to let it lie. Six.
You got six, which is a good score, I think.
It's a good. Well, it's half, isn't it? You're just over halfway.
Just over halfway, yeah. But
we were expecting you to get the full 10.
You've beaten Jack Barry, Yasmin Akram, Sam Ashurst, and you were even Stevens with Colin Holt.
You beat Sam Ashurst by quite a legendary mile, though, haven't you?
You've doubled his.
Three.
Yeah.
He calls himself an expert. So we've had a lot of fun today, and I think it just leaves me to wrap it all up with one of my words.
I'm off to Edinburgh.
Yeah, you better get a leg on. I think that's the phrase. Thank you for coming in, Richard.
It's my
pleasure. Thank you very much.
And we'll have you back again one day. I played the wrong fucking thing. How'd she get out of this? Oh no, we're playing Chim Chim Charoo.
Chim chimney, chim chimney, chim chim cheree. A sweep is as lucky as can be. Chim chimney, chim chimney, chim chim cheroo. Good luck will rub off when I shake hands with you. Ah, blow me a kiss, and that's lucky too. Da putty pass it, dude.